call the Foo Button.
Welcome to the Foo Button Podcast, where at any time it could go haywire. Now here are your hosts, Jay Surf and Twan.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Foo Button. I am Jay Surf, and with me, as always, is my good buddy Twan. What's up, man?
What's going on, dude?
More, another.
Oh, here we are again.
Man, episode number 7.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought, man? What do you got going on over there? What are you drinking today?
I'm not much of a day drinker, but I busted out a little Modelo, still sitting in my fridge. So, just enjoying an afternoon beer with you.
I mean, I think by now, man, we should be like fucking sponsored by Modelo or something.
I know, right?
If there's any Modelo reps out there, hook us up, man.
Hey, what do you got going on in your little can?
Keep the limes out of his beer, though. That's for sure.
Keep the limes out. No fucking limes.
And today I got like this tropical. It's called Tropical, and it's a cannabis infused seltzer. So I am hitting my tropicalness today. It's like nice. 90 degrees here in Jersey, so that's been actually really nice change from like the high 40s and low 50s. You know.
Are you guys in the hot weather now, or you think it'll get cold again?
No, it'll get cooler. So this week, I think, is supposed to be like mid-60s, low 70s, which in my opinion is nice. is perfect.
Perfect.
But the last couple of days, it's been a little bit of a heat wave. But you know what, man? Throw some Jimmy on, throw some THC drinks in the cooler, and I'm good to go.
There you go.
Yeah. So, hey, what'd you listen to today?
I went back after our last episode, and I actually went back, and especially for this show, I listened to the Record Plant show from, 74 in Sausalito.
Yeah, you did.
Just kind of prepping for this show, and, man, I look at all my bootlegs, and it's gotta be my favorite of all bootlegs.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
It's a bold statement, you know, great songs in it. It's early Jimmy.
Yeah. Which is the best.
It's the best. And there's some surprise guests in it. So it's just, it's one of my favorites. And the banter's, you know, it can't be beat. So that's what I was, had playing earlier this afternoon, or late morning. But yeah, always a good show to kick on and just kick back and listen.
Yeah.
So what about you?
I threw on Barometer Soup today, which is obviously
very nice.
You know, a 90s, kind of vibe to it, and came out in the 90s, obviously. But like I said, it's warm here, and I don't know, just something about that album and driving around with the top down. It's just really got that kind of warm weather, calypso, upbeat kind of vibe to it. There's just some really clever, like, songwriting on it, you know, and I know Peter Mayer was heavily involved with this album, especially part of the writing process. But, you know, like standouts for me, and I think that are kind of like sleepers, or Diamond as Big as the Ritz.
Great.
You know, obviously the title track, Barometer Soup, is fantastic. And then just something really just calls and speaks to me about the Bank of Bad Habits.
I wonder why.
But you know, you also have some kind of like self-reflective and like profound songs with Jimmy Dreams, and you know, there's even some great messaging in Barefoot Children. That's you know, part of why we're all fans, right?
Definitely.
Jimmy's able to, you know, be a humorist and, you know, but also at the same time be kind of profound and self-reflective. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great album, though.
No, that's for sure. But, man, I'm so glad that you listened to the Record Plant, because today we have a very, very special guest with us, and I'm super excited to have him on. The original Coral Reefer, Roger Bartlett. What's up, Roger?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
What's up,
very man? Good.
You another.
What's going on?
Not much, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you, taking the time to come kick it with us and hang out with us.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.
So you, speaking of weather, you're down in Florida, correct?
I am.
How's the weather been down there with Tuan?
It's been fantastic.
Yeah, because I know you had a couple shows get rescheduled or canceled within the last couple months, right? Because of weather.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just one of the hazards of playing around here. Is, you know, it's the lightning capital of the world down here.
Sure.
So, you know, and all the gigs are outside, you know, what I wouldn't give to play indoors for a change.
Yeah.
But it's great. You know, I love playing on the beach. You know, there's some big advantages to that, you know. Sure. Like the string bikinis go by, you know. And,
yeah, that's always, always a plus.
Sometimes I forget the words to the songs. So yeah.
Man, I love.
Are you still a fool for the blonde?
I am still a fool for the blonde, but I have a follow up coming up to that. It's called Fool.
Well, hey, man, you're in the right company because you're on the Fool button, so.
All right. That's... Well, I remember that Fool button.
Yeah.
And we press that Fool button many times.
Yeah, I bet. So you guys probably hit it a lot back in 1974, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
you know.
So, Roger, how did you get connected with Jimmy in 74?
It was actually 73. Okay. He was playing a club.
Yeah.
He was playing a club called Castle Creek in Austin, Texas, and I was down in Austin. I was working with a guy named Bill Callery, who wrote some songs for Jerry Jeff, and Willie did one of his songs, and you know, I was sort of going into my Django Reinhardt period.
Sure.
Django Reinhardt was like a gypsy jazz guitar player from the 1930s.
Yep.
And Bill couldn't really play the chords to my songs anymore, so we decided to quit working together. And so Bill was opening for Jimmy at Castle Creek, and I was playing bass and mandolin in the band for him.
Okay.
And you know, back in those days, you'd do like, you know, a four night run, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, you know, probably three night run, probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and. Probably on Saturday night, you know, I caught Jimmy backstage. I mean, there wasn't really a backstage. The bands went into the office behind the bar there. And I said, you know, hey, you need a guitar player.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
And he said, well, come on up and play on the next set and we'll see how things go. And that's kind of how loose it was, you know, like, I'm going to be in front of the audience for the gig, but come up and sit in. And so I watched his hands to see what the chords were. And I tried to mumble some backup singing, you know, come on, David. and then next thing I knew, we were playing the Troubadour in L.A. opening for Hoyt Axton.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, so and then after that, we went out, did a little tour with Three Dog Night.
Wow.
Yeah. We played the Music Hall in Boston and Bangor, Maine and Rochester, New York. And that's the only three I can remember. You know, I have a vague impression that there were more cities, but, you know, there's much of my life in those days are a vague impression.
Sure. So I have you guys down here in 74. You guys did over 100 shows. I mean, what's documented here is about 105 shows. And I got to ask,
that sounds about right.
In January, you guys played 1, 2, 3, 4. You guys played 5 nights in a row at this place called Bubba's in Miami. Do you remember that?
I do not.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, you know.
Yeah, and then you also played like 5 nights at the Quiet Night in Chicago.
I do remember that because, you know, in Chicago we went down to see Steve Goodman and John Prine and hang out with those guys.
Very cool.
And we also went to the Playboy Mansion.
Oh,
where I tried to get one of the secretaries to go out with me. I was like, "Hey, I'm going out to the gig tonight, baby. Got some hash, you know." she was like, "Oh, I have my boyfriend's birthday tonight." I said, "Ditch him, ditch him."
He doesn't have the hash.
Yeah, he doesn't have the hash, but it didn't work. But you know, when you're young, you know, you're gonna go for anything.
So you're telling me that you were at a Playboy party with like Steve Goodman and with Jimmy?
No, it wasn't a party. Me and Jimmy went down to the Playboy Mansion in the afternoon before the gig.
Okay, gotcha.
And I don't know why. He knew somebody there. You know, I just kind of trailed along on those things. I didn't know why or when or what, you know. I just like, I was the zombie following him along, you know.
So now, Roger, in those days, do you have any like memories or recollection of Jimmy using the name Marvin Gardens?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
I don't know if he used it directly to refer to himself, but, you know, it was sort of, you know, he would allude to, you know, kitty litter and Marvin Gardens and, you know.
The fake band.
Right, the fake band. But once I got on the scene, the fake band began to fade.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and he and I traveled together as a duo for... I don't know, a year and a half or something like that, just as a duo.
Like I said, you guys played over 100 shows, just you and him. I mean, looks like you were at the Troubadour 5 or 6 nights. It seems like you guys did, and you just mentioned this earlier on in the podcast, is that you do strings of like 4 or 5 shows in one place.
Right. We had a kind of a circuit we played. We played, Passim's Coffee House in Cambridge, and The Quiet Night in Chicago, The Boarding House in San Francisco, The Troubadour, The Great Southeastern Music Hall in Atlanta, you know, in different places around Florida.
Man, it says here you played 5 nights in New York at Max's Kansas City, and you opened for David Allan Coe.
You know, that's true. And I already knew David Allan Coe because when I, you know, I met Jimmy for the first time at the Exit Inn because I was in an acoustic trio called the Outlaw Brothers. And we opened for him there. I don't know. That might have been that first gig that he played at the Exit Inn. But, you know, I just met him briefly, you know, in the backstage area. You know how bands are, and like, hey, how are you? Okay, right. But we actually worked with David Allan Coe for a very short period of time because he loved the name, the Outlaw Brothers. And,
uh-huh.
You know, we went with David Allan Coe up to where he was from in Ohio. He had to get he had a hearse. And he wanted to get the hearse so he could drive it to gigs.
This was David Allan Coe?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I've never met him, but he seems like a... interesting person.
He was a pathological liar.
Yeah. Hey, I know lots of, those, don't worry.
Well, which is not uncommon in the music business, you know.
Yeah, and he would later go on, I think he wrote that song, what the hell is it, Jimmy Buffett Don't Live Here No More, when he was I guess down in Key West for a long time. And
yeah, could be. I mean, when we worked with him, his whole thing was like, you know, he was in prison for murder.
Wow.
But, you know, it turned out that, you know, he was only in juvenile detention for stealing a mop or something like that.
That reminds me of, who's the guy that Jerry Jeff really loved and was friends with? Was it Stoney? I think his name was Stoney or something, but Stoney... he's got a song about it. He would, you know, he ended up being a big, you know, tailspinner. And that he said was just a tall tale, you know?
Well, there's a lot of people like that in Austin at the time. There's another guy like that named Milton X. Nunn, who was Gary Nunn's cousin. Do you know who Gary Nunn is?
Yeah, of course. Yep, absolutely.
Milton was... Milton eventually ended up in prison for selling cocaine to a Fed.
But, yeah.
You know, he'd say stuff like, you know, I might have been born yesterday, but I was up late last night.
I might steal that. That's great.
So Roger, so you did a year and a half with Jimmy in 74. And then into 75. Now you guys recorded A1A when in 74?
Into
74?
Yep. Yep, it was in 74 that we did.
Do you remember a lot of that, the recording, because that's one of my favorite episodes?
I do remember that, because an awesome thing for me. I was, you know, overwhelmed. You know, here I am in a big recording studio with Sammy Creason, who played for Bill Black's Combo. Do you know who Bill Black's Combo is? They were an instrumental group, mm-hmm. and the Beatles opened for them when they toured England once. And, you know, there was Mike Utley, you know, who was playing with Rita Coolidge, or, mm-hmm. you know, all these people. And Reggie Young was there, the electric guitar player. Yep. I played acoustic guitar on there, and, you know, Farrell Morris and Doyle was there. But it was kind of overwhelming. But although I kind of had the kid, you know, oblivion going on, so that I just felt like I fit in with them, and you know, we cranked that album out.
And on top of that, they cut your song.
Yes,
with Dallas. When did you write that?
I wrote that in Dallas in like 1970, I think.
Okay.
Hey, what do you have against Dallas?
You know, I got the same question from a guy at the Dallas Morning News. he emailed me one time. You know, he said, "Oh, I was going to interview Jimmy and ask him about, you know, why he wrote Dallas, but I looked it up and I realized he didn't write it." You know, he said the same thing. What do you have against Dallas? And you know, it was just the period that I was in there, the band that I was in. You know, we were really kind of, the band was like, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash meets the band. Sure. You know, but then we started working with a booking agent who started getting us proms, and we started working nightclubs, and we had to do all these cover tunes. And then the girl singer in the band flipped out, you know. She was really schizophrenic. I mean, she was clinically schizophrenic. Sure. You know, so the booking agent had us play in a club, a Las Vegas style club there called the Losers Club. you know, we opened for Count Basie there, and we opened for Bill Haley and the Comets, and we opened for Jackie Wilson. You know who Jackie Wilson is? You know, Your Love Has Lifted Me Higher.
And higher.
And right. And, you know, But I finally had enough one night, and I had to wear a short-haired wig to play there because my hair was like down to my shoulders. And on the last night, you know, I took my wig off on stage and my hair fell down, and the club owners were like, "Oh!" And then, you know, we went backstage and the drummer for Bill Haley in the Comets was like, "Can I buy that wig from you?"
And that's wild.
So I sold, he was bald headed, so, you know, I sold my wig to the first rock and roll band.
A great story. Now, Jerry Jeff considered cutting that song as well, right? But he was like, "Man, Texas is like one of my main markets. I don't know if I can do it."
Well, I don't know if he actually considered it. I was pitching it to him, but he was like, "I won't do that song. Dallas is one of my big markets." Can't do that, you know.
But man, that's pretty incredible. I mean, you're on that album. I mean, honestly, in my kind of humble opinion, the B side of that album is perfect.
Is my song on the B side?
No, it's on the A side. But
you mother.
but again, the A side is also phenomenal, and Jimmy only picked three
He had to go there. He had to go there.
Jimmy only picked three other songwriters to cut songs from. I mean, that's Alex Harvey with Making Music for Money, and then John B. Sebastian with Stories We Could Tell. So, I mean, that's really awesome.
Well, you know, after he did that song, I said, if you don't want to make music for money, how are you going to pay me?
Oh, man. But no, great album. Love the song. Little stupid side note. I was in Dallas in 97, and I used to be a wakeboarder back in the day. And I went to a nationals tournament out there, and I fell like right away and kind of screwed my chances of getting into the finals. So spent all this money, took a trip, rode for about a minute and a half, and that was the end of my weekend. And I remember my last fall, the boat coming back to pick me up, and that song was just resonating in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm never coming back to Dallas.
My family lives there, you know, my brothers and my sisters.
Oh, very cool.
I love the line, talking to chairs is strange and I know it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's literally the truth.
Well, man, it was the 70s, man. Rock and roll.
Yeah. I tell you, the 70s were good to me, I believe, from what I can remember.
So Roger, so we go from 74 A1A and into 75, and it looks like, you know, Jimmy brings on Fingers and Harry Daly and Philip Vajardo.
Right.
Our little taco.
That's right. Harry came his recommendation came from a guy named Gove Scrivener. Have you ever heard of Gove?
Name sounds familiar.
Well, he was managed by the same guy who managed Jimmy, Don Light. And Harry had played bass for him. And Philip came from me, from Austin. And, you know, Fingers was really there before me, sort of. But, you know, and we went to Key West to rehearse, if you can believe that. You know, so here we are rehearsing in Tom Corcoran's gas station garage, you know, during the day and at night, just getting so blitzed, you know, that we could, you know, hardly get up to rehearse the next day. We had a great time. And then, you know, we did a gig there in Key West, you know, once we got the band to a point where, you know, we wanted to play somewhere before we went out in front of a big crowd. So,
and then in 75, you guys also did Rancho Deluxe, right? Did you go out and record that out there, or where did you guys record that?
You know, we did recorded Rancho Deluxe in Nashville, and they wouldn't. I think that was before the band, because I was the only one around, and they wouldn't spring for my plane ticket to fly out to Montana. You know, so they had somebody there. You know, I guess it wasn't in the budget. It was not a big movie,
right?
So I got to play on the album, and you know, that song. You left me with
Nail to Drive. That was you singing on that?
Yeah. You know, I
love that album.
We were in the studio and they did the track for that. It's a short little song. And Jimmy said, "You sing it." I was like, "What?" I really didn't know. He said, "Yeah, why don't you sing it? You go sing it." I was like, okay. So I went and sang it, you know, the rest is history, you know. I went straight to the top of the charts and, you know, I became an international celebrity.
That's why we appreciate it so much that you take the time to come talk to us on the field line. But no, Roger, we were talking last episode, Twan and I, that, you know, Fingers was with Jimmy, you know, and they did a tour, you know, him and just Jimmy, but Jimmy wasn't using the name Coral Reefer Band. And then in 73, Fingers kind of went off and was doing stuff with the High Steppers and all of that. So then when you came on, that's when Jimmy really started using Coral Reefer Band. So you are technically, right, the official first Coral Reefer Band member.
I don't know if there's any. You can say okay. that if you want. You know. I say I'm the first guitar gotcha. Player.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I think we've already said it, so we'll just roll with that. That'll be good.
You know, I think if it you know worked wonders with women, I'd use it. But you know, it doesn't seem to be having much effect these days.
So yeah. So then you guys go in and you do Havana Daydreamin' in '76.
Yep, that was the whole band. Okay. You know, and Jimmy, you know, Jimmy was trying to get the record label to let the band play on the records, you know, because up until then it had been, you know, all studio guys, you know, and the producer, Don Gant, you know, was a Nashville guy, and he was not that high on letting the band play on the record, but they gave us a little room to play, and I think we played, they let us play on one song called Train to Dixie or something like that Keith wrote. Yep. And I don't think we performed to their expectations, so it didn't make the record. But they always let me play on the album, you know, before the band was around.
Yeah, Train to Dixieland, you guys cut that, but it was cut from the album. And it's a shame because it's a great song.
It is a good song, but, you know, that we were so ragged off of the road, you know, that the track was a little funky time-wise, you know, it's kind of, it's a fast song. It's like, you know, that train beat.
Yep.
You know, it was kind of like the train was speeding up and slowing down, you know. It's like, oh.
Hey, that's just the drugs of the 1970s. That's all part of the experience.
That's right. Well, you know, nobody knew that things were not really that good back then because everybody was so high that, you know, no sure. one could tell.
Yeah, and that album was originally supposed to be called Kick It in the Second Wind. You know, yeah. That was going to be the title track. And then what else was on there, Twan? Was it Please Take Your Drunken 15 Drunken Girlfriend Home? Was that it?
Yep, that was on there. So all those didn't make the cut when it came out.
Well, you know, the drunken 15-year-old girlfriend thing, you know, it's sort of like one of those, they don't write them like that anymore.
No, they can't.
Right. You're not going to hear anybody covering that. No. Or, you know.
Nope.
maybe like Jockey Jordan down in Key West or something like that, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Probably won't hear a cover of I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man. You know, just don't write them like that anymore. No.
And hey, man, speaking
of, for good reason.
Exactly. Speaking of 75, I got to say one of my favorite bootleg shows that I always listen to for years and years now is the Boarding House show in 75. And you mentioned Boarding House that you guys would, you know, do that.
That was a pretty good show.
Yeah, it was. And I don't know if you know, it's up on YouTube, but man, I love that show. And you guys just sound absolutely awesome.
We've been working together for a while by then. And me and Harry had good background vocal parts. And, you know, we were a tight band. I listened to those things and I say, hey, you know, we did pretty good, didn't we?
No, I mean, absolutely. You guys play Dallas live. I'm looking at the set list right now. And then
we did
saxophones, man. That was your thing. That was your jam.
Well, you know, I dug that tune. You know, we used to do it as a duo, and it was nice to have a band, you know, to really give it some momentum. And, you know, I always had a good time doing Dallas, but, you know, I never had my own version of Dallas until, like, 2020.
Oh, wow. That late, huh?
That late. You know, I, like, went for years without, you know, having my own version. So, you know, when I did my album Sunset, I did a version of it here in St. Pete. And, you know, there was you know, no fingers to play on it. So I had a guy named T.C. Carr play harmonica on there. And, you know, the new version came out pretty good. On that album, Sunset, which you can find on your local streaming service.
That's right. Check your channels.
And I'm working on a new album. It's going to be called The Spice of Life, because what is the spice of life? Variety.
Yep.
Variety is the spice of life. And you know, I find it difficult to stick to one genre. So there's going to be, you know, many different styles of music on the thing.
You're always posting all kinds of different genres of music on your Facebook. You got great taste.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I love all kinds of music, all good music.
So Tuan mentioned that he listened to the Sausalito record plant today. And I got to say, for me too, like, it's top three favorite shows. You guys are just in this radio station, just having a ball. I'm pretty sure Jerry Jeff Walker is there. Is that correct?
Yeah. And the Lost Gonzo Band.
The Lost Gonzo Band and
Bob Livingston, Gary Nunn, John
Inman. Hey, I have a question for you. Livingston's Gone to Texas, the ballad. Is that about Bob Livingston? Okay.
No.
And I think Jimmy even mentions this was not written about him.
He says it in a way that it seems like he's fucking around. But Roger just...
What? Jimmy Buffett fucking around? Oh, never happened.
You got to say, and Tuan and I talked about this last episode, Roger, is that Livingston's Gone to Texas is our favorite ballad ever. I think it's one of his most underrated songs ever. And that version you guys do at the record plant is the GOAT. You know, it's the best. It really is. It's special.
Well, thanks, man.
Of course.
You know, that was kind of, you know, the spontaneity for something like that was, you know, what really makes it so good, I think.
And, you know, Roger, I know that, you know, your guitar and mandolin, I think there's a lot of people out there that probably don't know you're also a seasoned mouth conga player.
That's right. I don't get the chance to play mouth congas that much anymore, you know.
And I think you were coined as the fictitious core reefer is a stew in Stupendous Stork, if I remember correctly.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I was playing the mouth congas last night. Yes.
Yeah? You know, I got that mouth conga thing from Jose Feliciano.
I don't know who that is.
You know, he had a big hit on Light My Fire.
Okay.
70s. He's a blind Spanish guy. Plays nylon string guitar. You know, he's still out there working too.
But anyway, he passed that on to you.
He did. Yeah.
You ever bust it out?
Occasionally.
Occasionally.
Yeah, once in a while, if I'm up on stage and there's no guitar to grab or something, I'll just...
Now, what inspired the saxophone's dance?
You know, probably cocaine.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Marijuana, something like that. Yeah. Some kind of artificial inspiration.
Because you say on the show you gotta. What does he say, Tuan?
You got to stick your elbow out a little bit to the left or right, whichever arm you want to use. Then you got to clear your face of all emotion, kind of shake your head up and down. And then you slide your feet back and forth at the same time while scooting across. And the best is you're like hard to do on the road. And Jimmy's like hard to do on the radio.
He's like, you can tell by his voice. He's like, let's speed this thing up.
Yeah.
Hard to be on the radio too. Yeah. Very good.
I should be like, but I digress.
Well, it sounded like you guys didn't know what you were going to go into or open up with, and you guys open with Wino and I Know, and at the end of the song, Jimmy's like, "Yeah, I didn't know what the hell to do," and Roger just went right into it.
Well, you know, that happened occasionally. You know, we get out there and, you know, he'd get off into storytelling, and, you know, sometimes I had to nudge him a little bit to move along. You know, when you get out there and you know, his stories, you know, that was a big part of the thing, you know. Unfortunately, he doesn't, you know, in the venues that he plays now, he doesn't get a chance to, you know, tell the stories. But, you know, when we play in places like the Bottom Line in New York, yeah, or you know, the Quiet Night or the Troubadour, he could launch into a big story. And, you know, he had a whole thing, but he ran into Buford Pusser. Yep. You know who that is?
Yep. Walking Tall.
Present.
Yeah, yeah. And like ended up on the top of a car, and, you know, we played the Bottom Line one time, and he got a little stage frighty thing going on, and he didn't speak. He didn't tell stories, and we didn't do really well. And after the show, the record label guy was like, "You gotta tell stories. You gotta tell your stories." And Jimmy was like, "Oh yeah, okay, all right." So
I think that's what makes, you know, a lot of the old shows that we have access to as special as they are, you know, because, you know, from one venue to the next, it's like he'll tell the same story, but in a different way. And that's just part of, you know, he's just a great storyteller. So, you know, when we listen to some of these old shows, it's, you know, that's for me, the music's great, but I think what's more appealing is what's in between the songs.
Well, I mean, that did play a big part of why people came back to see him, is because,
yeah,
you know, he spoke right to them.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to people who just played and really didn't make a connection other than a musical connection. You know, it was like, you know, you were talking to your buddy. He's like, "Last night I went out and I,"
yeah,
whatever, you know.
So Roger, so we go from Havana in 76, and you were also, was Changes the last album you were on?
Yeah.
Yep. So your run was about 73 to 77 with him?
Something like that. You know, toward the end, I got out ostensibly to do my own music, but a big part of the reason I got out was because I was getting too far into the drug thing.
Yeah.
So I had to get out of there before I spontaneously combusted.
Which was probably pretty common in that era, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Just in the music industry in general?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Tom Johnson from the Doobie Brothers got out for the same reason. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, look at the people who stayed in the band. You know, Fingers and Harry. You know, Fingers is not in really good shape now. Harry's dead. You know, the drummer who followed Philip, he's dead now too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was one of the best times of my life, and I enjoyed it immensely. But I'm glad I got out when, sure, I did.
Yeah,
because, you know, now I'm 105, and, you know, I'm still in good shape.
Yeah, and I mean, Twan and I have talked about it on previous episodes. You know, if Jimmy doesn't have a lifestyle change in the late 80s, then who knows what happens to him, you know?
Well, and you know, the thing is, he always had to go do business stuff. He had to go do an interview here or an interview there or, you know, stuff like that. And Fingers and I would just keep going, you know? So like, you know, 3 days later, oh, you shit. Know, it'd be like, "We got a gig coming up. You got to stop."
Yeah, so. Yeah. And Roger, where were you living at the time during all this?
You know, I started out living in Austin, and then from Austin, I moved to Key West, and I had an apartment in Key, mm-hmm, West for a month, but we worked out on the road so much, I never got back to it. And I was like, I was a kid, I was 23, and so I just never went back.
Yeah.
I didn't tell the landlord I wasn't coming back or anything. I had a bank account I didn't close, you know. It's like, I'm not going back.
You just
back,
left all your shit there?
I didn't really have any shit.
Hey,
I had a guitar and and some t-shirts and a couple pair of jeans, and that was about it. Then I moved to Nashville, and for a while I didn't live anywhere. And we worked on the road so much, you know, like off when we stopped, I'd go stay somewhere, you know, I'd go stay down on at his crib there in Key West, or you know, stay with somebody in Nashville, or you know, till I decided I wanted a record player, so I had to get a place to leave the record player.
Roger, what's one of your favorite finger stories?
Well, one time we played before the band, we played the Troubadour, and there was some folk singing girl that we were opening for, and so we did our set, and after the set, you know, Jimmy went off somewhere with somebody, and me and Fingers were up in the dressing room at the Troubadour playing blues stuff, and we were drinking champagne, you know, they had to send somebody up to say, you got to keep it down, we can hear you on stage, you know. And then after the show was over, we were staying at a place called the Tropicana, which was an old bungalow style motel, you know, where all the musicians who played the Troubadour stayed at the Tropicana. So, you know, there was like a bungalow and two rooms in the bungalow, and another bungalow, two rooms. So me and Fingers hooked up with these two ladies who were definitely, you know, like two bottles of champagne kind of ladies, and took them back to the Tropicana you know, ended up riding them around the room, and then they rode us around the room. And you know, the next day you wake up, you know, it's like the you know, gnaw your arm off kind of thing, you know.
Yeehaw.
So,
and now they reside in the home for the wayward girls.
That's right. You know, I was just at the home for wayward girls the other day. I said, do you save bad girls? They said, yes, we do. I said, well, save me one for Saturday night.
That is too funny. So, you know, I was
here's another good finger story.
Please go ahead.
I love this one. After I left the band, I was living in New York City, and Fingers came to town. And he said, hey, let's get together. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, we got together. He's staying with his girlfriend there, a girl named Susan Arxie.
Hey, what year Canadian was this, Roger? Girl.
And this was, I don't know, early 80s, you know, mid 80s, something like that, you know. So, you know, he said, oh, come on, we'll have dinner, you know, hang out. And I went down and met her, and she was a beautiful kind of Christy Brinkley looking blonde. Like, oh my God, you know. And Finger says, you know, she's got to get her stuff from her boyfriend's house. You know, they're breaking up, and we're going to go over there and get some stuff. He's not in town. So we go over to his apartment, you know, and I look up on the wall, and the guy's name is Don Lalonde, and he's the light heavyweight champion of the world. And I was like, Fingers, you know, are you sure you really want this girl? You know? It's like, we better get that stuff and let's get out of here. I don't want to be here. Oh, he comes back, you know. It's like,
that's pretty funny. That's classic. It seems like whenever you talk to, you know, band members or crew members, they always have a good finger story. So that's why I had to ask.
Well, he was definitely he definitely is an interesting guy. Always, you know, one time we played Houston, and just before Houston, Fingers and Jerry Jeff went to New Orleans, and they more or less, you know, spent the weekend at a porn theater drinking in New Orleans. And when Fingers came back to play the gig, he was so drunk still You know, we were playing, and usually he could play no matter how drunk he got. But that night, you know, he was on my side of the stage, and it came time for his solo, and he started playing, and I listened to him, and I was like, he's only playing one note. And I went over to Jimmy. I said, he's playing one note. He was like, So I don't know.
How would Jimmy kind of handle that? Would he kind of, you know, be like, Fingers, what are you doing? Or would he just be like, it's a bad night? Yeah.
Yeah. The latter rather than the former.
Yeah.
You know, it's like no one knew anyone had a problem because everyone had a problem.
Right.
You know, we had a T-shirt. It was called the D&O Award, the Drunken Outrageous Award. And, you know, if you threw up, it was an automatic win. But whoever won got to wear it around, you know, until the next person took it over. So, you know, it was not a problematic thing. It was not like, you know, hey, man, you better not get stoned before the gig. You know, no one said stuff like that. People are like,
hey, yeah, but I got to say, man, you guys can fucking play, you know. And for me, '70s, and Twan and I have talked about this, you know, those like drunk Caribbean rock and roll years are just really special. And that sound is pretty special.
We had a good time, and you know, we became a tight band working together, and that was very nice. But you know, we were nothing like the musicians he has now. You know, Peter Mayer is you know, a virtuoso and sings really great. You know, I remember his bass player after a gig they played. You know, the bass player was backstage saying, "Does that guy ever make a mistake?" and you know. His brothers, Jim and Roger Guth, you know, and Mike, you know, Utley, you know, great, great band. I mean, Utley was with us actually, he was never in the band.
He was a studio guy, right?
Band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He was with like Christofferson, wasn't he? You
know, he did play for Christofferson. And then when Chris and Rita got together, he played for Chris and Rita. And when Chris and Rita split up, he was like, hey, I don't want to be involved in any of this stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, God bless him. He's been doing it now with Jimmy for, I guess, over 40 years, right? I mean, yeah.
Yep, yeah, yeah. This year is the 50th anniversary of the year that I went to work for Jimmy.
That's cool.
Oh, wow.
It was like October 1973, something like that. Mm-hmm. November.
So Roger, in the midst of all this, you did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. You wrote for that.
I did that before I went to work for Jimmy.
Gotcha. That's coming up on 50 years now too, isn't it? The original.
Well, let me put it this way: I wrote the song and recorded it in 73, so it was shortly before I went to work for Jimmy. Then the movie came out in 74. And, you know, nobody had any idea it was going to be, you know, a classic movie. It was a low budget, you know, film by film students at University of Texas. So who knew? You know, it was banned in Europe until 1998 for being
too
violent.
That movie still scares the shit out of me.
Oh, wow.
I got to be
I know.
I ain't throwing that on anytime soon. I got to be honest.
You know, and you know, at a certain point after things like Pinhead came out, you know, they were like, well, you know, it's not really that violent, you know. It's like, you know, when the computers show like the head exploding and all the little droplets of blood floating through the air, like, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is more like Psycho,
right? So you've done quite a few soundtracks, though, haven't you?
I wouldn't say quite a few, you know. I did the Titanic, and I did Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and I did.
Wait, hold on, let me fact check those.
Wait a minute!
So the one I want to ask you a question about is there was a movie called The Incoming Freshman.
I did the soundtrack for that, yes.
So let me ask you something.
It was a double bill with Gas Pump Girls.
So in the movie, there's a band on stage wearing goat masks, and they're singing the song "Do the Goat."
That's right.
Is that you up there playing?
It is.
It is. Wearing the mask.
And you know the people in the band were some amazing people. The guy who was playing drums was a guy named Richie Morales, who played with Al DiMeola and Spyro Gyra and, you know, the Brecker Brothers and the guy playing saxophone, Chris Mencio, played with the Rolling Stones and James Brown and, you know, let me think who else was in the band there. Oh, the piano player is a guy named Robbie Condor, who played with Carole King and Linda Ronstadt and, you know, Robbie said, you know, the nicest thing that anyone ever said to me was I was in the studio once with Aretha Franklin and I heard the talk back button hit and she said, it don't need to be any funkier than that.
Man, that's wild. Yep.
So this goat, this Do the Goat is, I know that you have a home movie or home video out there of you guys kind of in. Doing it. Is that where it came from, or was
this came from the movie, and then that video?
Gotcha.
You know, was I edited down? Saturday Night Live had a home movie competition for a while, and people sent in their home movies, and they'd choose one and play it on Saturday Night Live, So we did Do the Goat down there in Key West, and it was a lot longer than the one I have up now. And we sent it into Saturday Night Live, and it did not win. But, you know, did you see the movie that I have up on YouTube?
Yeah, the home video.
Yeah, you know, the way we put our fingers up for the horns there, you know. Saturday Night Live came out, you know, a couple of weeks later with a dance called the Antler Dance, which was very much like Do the Goat. And, you know, they stole my dance.
Well, if they're listening, we're coming after them for the fucking goat dance. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, there's some royalties that need to be paid.
Man, I think so, you know, or at least a nice music spot on the show now.
Yeah. I got to get that movie clip of this goat thing, because that's perfect for songwriters. I got to put that up there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a quick flash, but yeah, it's entertaining.
I cut it down so it was not that long, and I did a new version of the song Do the Goat.
Well, maybe I'll get a little stone later and watch The Incoming Freshman.
That was back in the day of the sort of TNA drive-in movies, you know, where you didn't really see anything. They just sort of, you know, made you think you were going to see something.
You weren't there for the movie anyway.
Like I say, I was there. I was in the fraternity party scene where we did Do the Goat, where they had all the girls get into the phone booth, see how many girls they could put in the phone booth.
How many topless girls that could fit in there.
Speaking of home videos, home video you got of you guys on the road, that's really good stuff.
Yeah. You know, my girlfriend at the time, Phyllis McBride, was along with us, and she had a Super 8 camera. And, you know, we took that. I took, you know, there was a lot more film there. There's a bunch of stuff of us, of just the band, not Jimmy, in New York City. And I don't know what, I've been looking for that. You know, I think I promised you that.
Yeah.
You know, can't seem to find it.
I mean, that first video is awesome. I don't know what happened to it. You know, I love when Jimmy gets off the bus and he says the F you to the camera. He's doing the line off the book. I mean, that's pretty hilarious and classic.
Well, there's a documentary, I think, coming out about Jimmy and Jim Harrison and,
oh, yeah,
and Hunter Thompson and Tom McGuane, and they're going to use those, that little clip of him snorting the.
That would be cocaine. That would be pretty cool. I hope that's true. I hope that's coming out.
Well, they're working on it, and I think they paid for that little clip. So, you know, so long as they paid for the clip, I don't really care whether they come out with the movie or not.
So I think it was like 2001. You guys did that reunion show where it was all the original Reefers plus Keith Sykes, right? And McColl, I believe, was there. And Jay Spell.
Jay
correct.
Spell.
And man, that record's awesome. I've been listening to that a lot. I think I texted you that this record's awesome.
You know, we were just lucky. I talked to the club owner and I said, oh geez, I'd love to record the show, you know, and do an album of this. And he said, well, you know, I've got a digital audio setup, 24 tracks. I can record it to a hard disk. And I said, well, okay, let's do it, you know, and I'll buy the hard disk from you and you can put a new one in your computer. And I took it home and mixed it down. And it was good that we did it then, because it wasn't too much longer before Harry died. Yeah,
and then Fingers got sick, you know, a couple years after that, right? I mean, after 2007 whatever it was. Yeah, I got to say, I love Long, Long Legs, and I love going down to New Orleans. Yeah.
Oh, well,
those are great tracks.
So,
how long did that take to kind of put together with all those people?
You know, I think there was a guy named Bob Robinson, who's a parrot head, lives in South Carolina, and it was his idea to put the thing together, and I told him I was going to record it, and I got in touch with everybody, and I said, hey, send me the songs you're going to do and any charts that you have, and so I distributed them to everybody, so I tried to, you know, get a little pre-roll or
sure.
Try to get ready for the thing.
Was that one of the first times you guys had all gotten together since you left the band? Or I know you said you kind of hung out with Fingers after you left, but was that really one of the first times you guys all kind of got back together like this?
It was the first time.
The first time.
And the last time too. So, but we had a good time. Fingers showed up there. He was married to Amanda back then. And at that point, Amanda was like 21. And she was so hot back then. You just can't imagine, you know. She was like, she had Steven and Hunter with her. You know, one of them was in a crib. She was pushing the crib with, you know, little hot pants on with the cheeks of her butt hanging out of there. I was like, oh, don't look. Oh, look.
Impure thoughts, right? But yeah, if anybody's listening out there, check out this album. It's called Reunion. It's live at the Windjammer. It's definitely worth it. It's a really great live album and really special, in my opinion. Yeah, man.
Oh,
and
thanks.
So,
I'm glad you like it.
Just to kind of wrap up here, you did a special appearance at a Vegas show. Was that in the 2000s?
I sat in at the MGM
Grand. Yeah, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I went down to the show with a guy named Barry Cunningham, who does a big Jimmy Buffett tribute, and he was like jonesing for me to get him in backstage to meet Jimmy, but you know, nobody gets to meet Jimmy. So we got in there backstage, and you know, I got a picture up of me and him and the rest of the Coral Reefers standing there, and it was taken by Bill Payne.
Hell yeah, love Little Feet, man. It's one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike went off to the dressing room. We came back. He said, oh, Jimmy wants to see you. And I said, oh, great. You know, went back there. He said, yeah, come on up, sit in. You know, you sit in on Margaritaville. I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, sat there during the show, and you know, Margaritaville came up, and he set up the guitar tech to give me a guitar and put me out there. So the guy, you know, dropped a guitar on me and pushed me out on the stage, and they started playing Margaritaville. And, you know, I'd been years since I played that song, and I asked the tech what key it was in. He said C. So here I am strumming in C, you know, and Peter Mayer looks across the stage and points at his hand. He's playing D. I was like, oh, okay. You know, like a verse into the song, Jimmy turns around, and he looks, and he sees me there, and he looks at me like, what the hell are you doing here? And then he's like, oh, okay. And, you know, he says, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the original Coral Reefer, sure. I don't know, or whatever he said, you know.
I got a friend of mine playing over here. Mr. Roger Bartlett was the original Coral Reefer about 37 years ago, just moved to Las Vegas. And for those of you who may have seen us in Austin, Texas, when there were just two of us, that was Roger. It's great to have him back playing with us on the stage. Thank you, Roger.
People came to their feet and brought out lighters, and women threw their panties on stage. And well, maybe
but
not.
But hey,
that's
a cool experience to have. Late, you know, that many years later on, that's got to be pretty cool. Yeah.
It was very cool, you know, and to play at the MGM Grand, you know. That's a really great venue.
No, for sure. Yeah, I've only been to Vegas twice, and I don't think I'm going back. So.
I lived there for about a year and a half.
If I lived there, I would probably die, to be honest with you. So I'm going to stay out of there. I try to stay out of places that are bad for my health, you know.
Well, you know, by the time I lived in Vegas, you know, I was clean and sober. So.
There you go. But hey, Roger, you know, we really can't thank you enough. It's been, you know, really awesome speaking to you and you know, listening to your stories. For me, you know, I'm kind of a Jimmy fan through and through, and I think, you know, Twan would agree. But, you know, as we always say on here, there's just something really special about, you know, those first 15, kind of 20 years of the music and the band and the crew and the stories. And, you know, it was obviously a different time then. So it's just great to kind of sit back with you and have a drink. And, you know, you've been so supportive of songwriters, and we really appreciate that. And we just wanted to say thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. You know, it's a good thing going on.
We appreciate it. And who knows, man, maybe we'll have to have you back on here for like a part two or something. I feel like we could shoot the shit with you for a long time.
Well, you know, if I run out of the truth, I can always make stuff up.
We'll take whatever we can get. So that works out. Exactly.
Exactly.
We'll do the stories about the shooting of the video.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, we got some exciting things. Roger and I have been talking about, you know, collaborating with him and songwriters. So I think there'll be some fun stuff coming out in the future. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, Roger. And thanks to everyone for listening to The Fool Button. We really appreciate it. Stay tuned. You know, the website for the Songwriters Joint will be out. So we appreciate it. If you head on over there, there's lots of good stuff happening. But episode 7, man, that's a wrap. Boogie, it's not even 3 o'clock. So we got the rest of the day, man.
We got the rest of the day.
But anyway, thank you again, Roger. And party on, Twan.
Party on, Jay.
Listening to the Fool Button podcast presented by the Songwriters Joint. Follow the Songwriters Joint on Facebook and Instagram for amazing content that features Marvin Gardens and all of his songwriting friends. Let's get together and fight.